Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody here from Chicago. Welcome to our podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking to Mr. David Pereira. He is the CEO and founder of a leading cybersecurity firm called SecPro LLC. They are based in Alexandria, Virginia. David, thanks for your time, and let's go get started.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Thank you. Well, we looked up your bio. We did a little bit of background snooping on you on Google to kind of see what your background looks like. You seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity and security. Can you tell us about some of the highlights of your career, like why you decided to get into cybersecurity and any like transitioning moments that made you decide to get into this field?
Of course. When I started 25 years ago, in that moment, nobody talks about cybersecurity, right? In that moment, the close thing was a nice book called Anarchist Cookbook. This is old school. And this book contains information about the protocols and, in that moment, some techniques, attacks, etc. For some reason, I received that book and was very interested to me. I always want to know how the things work. And my first job in a professional way was as a CTO of a company with a Novell network infrastructure. In that moment, I think the Novell 2 or something like that with the old protocols, etc. And my first steps were in infrastructure. So, you know, network configuration, design, etc. But then I fall in love into the cybersecurity, and well, I never changed after that. So the highlights can be the moment that I received the book was a very, very important highlight for me. Then to be informed about some companies like Easy Council, SANS, etc., that provides training, specialized training in cybersecurity. And then I start my certification path and then become instructor for companies like Easy Council. I am an international instructor in ethical hacking, penetration testing, forensic computer, etc. And, well, that's the other part is history.
Okay, excellent. So how did you venture into SecPro? Was this a company that you started on your own, or did you have other partners to help you? Tell us about the history of your company.
Well, SecPro, it's our company. I am the founder and creator. And SecPro was born due to the need of the market, because a lot of our clients start asking for more and more and more services related with cybersecurity because, you know, the malicious actors are increasing the attacks year by year. So 15 years ago, we created SecPro as a solution for the market needs in different countries. So that's the origins of the company, solve a market need. Because the companies not only need services, they need a company that really care about their needs and be in front of the problems side by side and can provide the best of the trainings, world-class trainings. So normally, one of the things we try in the company is to provide the knowledge to the IT teams in the companies, so they can be self-sufficient. They can work by themselves. They don't. They are not dependent from other companies. And it's one of the objectives of our company. Not only provide the best of the service, provide the best of the training, so the companies can work and can walk by themselves.
Okay, excellent. Now, how long has the company been in business, and how large is your company?
We have been in business 15 years. We are working in different countries. Yeah, Our payroll is 27 people. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Now, do you have a presence in other countries as well? You had mentioned your other countries. Are those just projects, or do you have offices in those countries also, or?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question. We have offices and headquarters in Colombia, in Bogota, and in Alexandria, in Virginia. We have physical presence. Yeah, but we operate in 9 countries with partners and operations in 15. So we have partners in Chile. We have partners in Chile, Ecuador, Peru, Panama, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Mexico, Spain. And we have operations in 15 countries. We have operations in Brazil, Chile. We have projects. We have a lot of different projects. And in some cases, we need to establish physical operation. But, with the pandemics and all of these remote presence and all the tools we have, normally we can execute projects in any part of the world in a remote way. Mm-hmm. And we did that even before the pandemics. Normally it's one of the ways we work, and we prefer that. It's most affordable for the clients. If you don't need to move an engineer to go to be on site, etc. And it's the best way to work in our field.
Okay, excellent. Now, who is your typical customer that you're trying to target? Who has been your main bread and butter or your sweet spot? Is it small and medium-sized businesses, the Fortune 500, or the government, or perhaps a mixture of all three of them?
That's a very interesting question. We have all kind of companies and all size of companies because, cybersecurity is a need for every company. If you manage information, any kind of information, doesn't matter if you are a solopreneur or you are a multinational 5,000 employees company, you need cybersecurity. So we have multinational companies with 10,000 employees as clients, and small entities like schools. One of the smallest clients we have is a school. They have 1,000 students and 20-30 people in the payroll. So at the end of the day, cybersecurity is, as I mentioned, a need. Some people mentioned that it's like a commodity. But at the end of the day, all the people should be involved in cybersecurity and be aware about the risk, etc. So our perfect client, it's all the people that manage information. Doesn't matter if you have working in a small company, a big company, or if you are in your home, because you have access to information and you have your own information. And you need to protect your information, your bank account, your credit card information, your email information, etc. All the information is important. And there are cyber criminals trying to reach all kind of information because they are just looking for money. So sometimes people in my conference say, I am not a target. I am not an attractive target for a criminal because I don't have money. And that's a big mistake because people think that if they don't have $100,000 in their bank account, they are not attractive. And no, that's a mistake. They have a real passport. They have a real ID. They have a real profile. And they are attractive. All the information that a malicious actor can steal from a person, credit card information, etc., can be sold in dark markets in $5 to $10 to $20 each profile. So that gives you a real perspective how many people needs to be compromised from the hackers, malicious hackers perspective, from the criminal perspective, how many people needs to be compromised to be attractive for the criminal? So the criminal needs to compromise 100, 200, 500, 1,000 people, so he is going to make or she is going to make more money. So it's exactly the opposite. All the people can be a victim, and all the people needs to be aware of cybersecurity.
Right, excellent. Now let's do a little bit of a deeper dive into your product and service line. And it looks like you've got, I think, in three distinct phases, the network security, the application security, and the cloud security. Could you give us a little bit more detail into each of all three of them, please?
Of course. Well, in network security, normally we work with the company trying to detect their vulnerabilities in their infrastructure in different ways. Normally companies have mail servers, web servers, VPN servers, servers to share information, etc. So for that kind of diagnostics, we execute external penetration testing. So that kind of diagnostic allow us to tell the client, okay, you have these and these and these vulnerabilities, and you need to solve them in these and these and these ways to increase your cybersecurity level. Because we need to have this in mind. It's almost impossible, or not, no, it's impossible to be totally safe. It's impossible. What we do in cybersecurity is to try to reduce your risk level to an acceptable level. That's what we do. If the company only have or internal, or they are just worried about the internal infrastructure, we can execute internal penetration testing. And both things are connected with a diagnostic that is called attack surface detection. What is the attack surface? All the surface that a malicious actors can use to attack a company. Maybe external infrastructure, internal infrastructure, a hybrid, etc. We execute vulnerability assessments as well. A vulnerability assessment is totally different of a penetration testing. In a vulnerability assessment, we use automated tools to detect vulnerabilities. In a penetration testing, we not only use automated tools, we execute attacks from the attacker's perspective to demonstrate the vulnerability, to capture evidence and provide that evidence to the client. So the client can be totally sure that this vulnerability can be exploited and is a big risk for them. We have ethical hacking services and red team services. In these services, you can detect almost any kind of gap in your infrastructure. These services, ethical hacking, red team, are oriented to companies that already execute vulnerability assessment, already execute penetration testing, and they just want to fill the gaps, any kind of additional gap that they can have in their infrastructure. Because ethical hacking and red team services are executed from the malicious actor's perspective. That means everything can be used. Control malware, phishing campaigns, fake phone calls, I mean, phishing, everything is valid to compromise infrastructure. It's just like the malicious actor's perspective that selects you as a target, and they are going to do everything in their power to compromise your infrastructure. So that's in the network security part. In the application security, we have different diagnostics as well, like dynamic application security testing. That kind of diagnostics are executed against the web infrastructure, your website, or your portal, a transactional portal. These services, normally it's acquired by financial institutions, banks, etc., that wants to be sure that the portals that they are using to receive the client's information or the client's transactions are safe. So we can do that in a dynamic way. That means using the website looking for vulnerabilities. And there is another test that is called SAST. That means static application security. And in that test, you take the source code of the applications and you look for errors in the coding, developers' errors, that can lead to an exploitation or that can lead to a vulnerability. And we do API testing. The APIs are very, very common in professional environments because allow the users to query information or to capture information from portals in a very easy way with one line of commands. And normally, they are not so well protected. So we execute tests against APIs. In cloud, well, I don't know if you want me to talk about cloud.
Yes, please go ahead. And one question I was going to ask you is, what's your preference, the AWS or Microsoft Azure? I have my preference, but I'll wait till you answer the question.
Wow, difficult question. But well, in cloud, we normally try to detect misconfiguration, mistakes that sometimes the IT people made in the configuration and the creation of the buckets or in the cloud infrastructure. And everybody are using cloud, right? Normally, if you are using an email like Outlook email, etc., you are using cloud. If you are using design tools like Canva, you are using cloud services. Sometimes you can configure a VPS, right? So you have your own server, or well, a server in a cloud, and you can configure by your own. So cloud is a very, very common vector of attack for malicious actors, and you need to protect your cloud. Well, you made a question about my preferred provider in cloud. Was the question, or?
Yeah, who do you like more, the Amazon Web Services, or do you like Azure better?
Well, to be totally honest, I use almost all of them, but my favorite one, Linode, my favorite one. But if you need me to answer between Amazon and Microsoft Azure, I'll say Microsoft right now, Azure.
Yeah, that's my favorite one. In fact, I've got a client out in Oregon. They're one of the top cloud services providers for Microsoft. I've written a lot of stuff on them about Azure, and I'm just impressed with what Microsoft has done in the short amount of time that they've been, been in the cloud environment like that. It just seems like that their tools are much used, and they're definitely more tuned to SMB. In fact, I don't know if you do any work with what they call the CMMC. It's where, the defense contractors come into compliance with the DoD requirements, and they have done a lot of work on that for the defense industrial base to come into compliance with that. And I don't know if Amazon has done, or if AWS has done anything like that for the defense of industrial base like that. That's why I'm really impressed with them.
So yeah, I totally agree.
No, go ahead. Please.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I just want to mention and agree with the tools part because Microsoft tools are amazing. They increase their capabilities in an outstanding way. You have a cloud active directory, and it's amazing. And you can control so many things, authentication, even the automation. Automation is so powerful. I love the tools that Microsoft are providing right now.
Yeah, it's incredible. In fact, as I told you before the podcast, I'm hoping I can get a book written on that and how to deploy the Zero Trust framework into Azure. But anyway, moving further, do you have any client success stories or any client testimonials, or I should say, use cases that you'd like to share with us on a non-confidential basis?
Yeah, of course. In our day-by-day work, we front so many things. I can tell you one of the things that makes me proud. We already protect elections in different countries 17 times. From 2011 to the past year, 2022, we already protect 17 elections in different countries with zero incidents. And, elections in different countries are one of the most attacked events for many reasons, right? And for many actors from different countries. In one of the exercises, we received a crazy amount of traffic, like something like 80 or, let me remember, like 100 gigs per second in one of the interfaces in one of the servers. So it was so crazy in that moment. And it makes me proud that we have that kind of responsibilities and we succeed. Stories, well, a lot of them. One time we execute penetration testing for an intelligence agency in one country. And they were so confident in the first stage because they have a lot of technology and a lot of security, but they trust a lot in their providers. And I think that was a mistake, and that reinforced my idea that each one of the entities, each one of the companies needs to know what they are doing. And they need to understand the technology that they are using and how to configure them and how to harden the technology in the proper way. So they have amazing technologies, even biometric and proximity technologies. If you reach like 2 or 3 foot from the computer locks out, etc. A lot of nice technologies, but they forgot to harden. And I can compromise their infrastructure due to misconfiguration errors in the amazing security technology they have. So it was so interesting for me to compromise an intelligence agency just because they made mistakes in their configuration, in their security mechanisms, because they trust their providers. Was very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's like a paradox. What else? Well, so many stories. It's a very good question. One time working with authorities in one country, they want to compromise a criminal infrastructure, and was a very interesting case because we're not so big, but they make a lot of money. They are like 8 people, and they work in the same office all the time, each day in the year. And it took like almost 11 months for me, almost an entire year to compromise them, because was so difficult, because 8 people all the time in the same place, if you send a fake email to one of them, of course, they know it. And they just ask, hey, you send me an email, and just the other guy say, no, okay, did it. And was almost impossible to compromise them. And well, again, social engineering succeed. And with one prompt, we succeed in the compromise, and we can de-articulate the entire gang, and was so comforting for us to de-articulate these guys that makes more or less in that moment, that was like 10 years ago, or no, like 8 years ago, they make more than, I think, in that moment, $20 million.
Oh, well.
In criminal activities. They make everything, you know, they were connected with a lot of things, drugs, the most of the things, drugs, gangs, well, a lot of things, but was very interesting case. So normally people, again, we take so much care about awareness, because the most effective way to compromise an organization is through the people. That's why we say all the time that people is the first line of cyber defense of a company. And sometimes, in an unfortunate way, companies don't realize how important it is to train and to empower their people, because they can be the most important part of their cybersecurity plan.
Yeah. I read a lot of articles online where people say that employees are the weakest link in the security chain, but I take your position.
I hate that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, Robbie,
I know.
You don't
I
know how much I hate that phrase that is so common, that people is the weakest link. Yeah, yeah. I hate that because why? Why is that? Because we treat people in that way. We in some cases, cybersecurity people try to diminish the activities of the users, try to make the users feel uncomfortable using technology, and with a very, very unfair feeling of, okay, I can do things that you can't. I can do things that you never understand. Man, that's, I hate that. You, if you empower the people, if you train the people, you are going to have a very solid cyber defense. And it's my experience. And I have a lot of cases that can testify about it.
Well, I believe people are your first line of defense too. I hate that philosophy, but cool. Anyway, so
exactly.
Now before the podcast started, we were talking about books and writing. Now, tell me, told me, I think you published one or two books. Tell me about your books.
Well, one of the books was in Spanish, the other one was in English. The books are oriented to people, exactly to people. The books are called Cybersecurity for Everyone. And the title of the book is a reflection about what we think, because cybersecurity should be for everyone. It's not a thing that only experts can manage. It's a field that everybody can be proficient. And I'm talking about all levels. My books are oriented to any person that has interest in technology, that works with email, works with their computers, browse internet, etc. So my book can be read for a kid in the school or for the CEO of a company, or the CFO or CTO. Oh, wow. But yeah. It's in very simple words, and it covers things like how to create a strong password, but in real. How to know if an email is real or not, how to detect a fake email, how to detect a phishing, how to safe browse the internet, what kind of tools you need to be sure that the website that you are visiting is the real bank website. That kind of thing, that it's a thing that should be normal knowledge, right? So that's the idea of the book. But one of the things I love the most in cybersecurity is that any kind of person can succeed in the field. In my company, I have very interesting cases in pen testing. Some of our pen testers, one of them is a lawyer, and he's an amazing pen tester. I have one girl in the pen testing department, and she comes from the pharmaceuticals area. So, and she's amazing. So cybersecurity, Ravi, I think that it's the most important field and the field with more reach, or it's going to grow the most in the near future, because all the people needs to protect information. And one of the things I love is that can be open to everybody. That's why the title of my book, and that's why I try to be, be an evangelist about cybersecurity.
Okay, excellent. Now, where can we buy? Where can one buy these books? That is it on Amazon or?
Yeah, they are in Amazon, and and we provide these books if in the audience, there is a school that the kids have this book. We are more than happy to share the book with the kids. If we can to at least save one kid, one girl from a cyber predator, from a cyber criminal that is a catfishing profile, etc., and wants to trade them, etc. If we can save only one kid, only one girl, from this, we consider that this is a success, an entire success. So we provide this book for free to any school that wants the book.
Excellent. That really sounds excellent. I think I'm actually on that website. I think I'm going to go buy a book myself too. So anyway, cool.
Thank you so much.
Now you've got, no problem. Now you created a new series of videos. It's called The Roadmap to Cybersecurity. Can you tell us
yes.
about the content? Where that's available at?
Yeah, they are available. Normally we are publishing two by week. They are an entire, I think, 10 different videos. We create those videos because in some way we feel that people hear about cybersecurity in the news, you know. They know that some malicious group create a new malware and compromise an infrastructure, maybe with a ransomware. They encrypt the information and the company needs to pay. And that's the news, right? But when we approach to our clients and we start asking, okay, what do you do in cybersecurity? We found that in a lot of cases, people is not really familiar with cybersecurity. If you ask, okay, which one is your attack surface? Tell us about your attack surface. People don't even realize all the potential vectors that they have, or they present to a potential cyber criminal or to a nefarious actor. Or when we talk about the cybersecurity maturity level for a company, and we ask them, okay, which one is your level? What do you have? And what is your projection or your prospect to increase your cybersecurity maturity level? They say there is a cybersecurity maturity level. How can I measure this? So we create these videos to solve that kind of need. If a person wants to know, okay, how is a phishing attack? Because everybody talks about phishing. Everybody talks about fake emails, but people don't know that phishing is not only emails. No, phishing is related with communication channels, not only with emails. Emails is the more common, okay, but how with a fake email a malicious actor can compromise them? And people sometimes think that they are going to be compromised only if they download an attachment and they execute it. And no, only with a click can be compromised. So we try to fill the gap between the common knowledge or the knowledge provided by the news in the most of the cases and the real risk, the real and potential threats that they front day by day. So we talk about the cybersecurity maturity level, the attack surface, the cloud computing, and the attack vectors related with cloud computing. What is a penetration testing? People sometimes, this is so common. People call us and say, we need an ethical hacking. And we say, okay, so you want that we behave as a malicious actor and we send you fake emails, we send you a control malware, etc. And they say, no. We just want to know if our servers are vulnerable and that you capture evidence and show us, okay, you want a penetration testing, not an ethical hacking. And sometimes they call again, we want an ethical hacking. And we say, okay, you want us to use malware, blah, blah. And they say, no. We just want a report from a tool that give us the insights and we can solve it. Okay, so you don't want evidence? No, okay, you want a vulnerability assessment. So people is not clear about the different diagnostics you can execute. They are so confused in the most of the cases between a vulnerability assessment, penetration testing, and in penetration testing, you know, you have gray box, black box, white box. Well, people is not clear about this. So we create these videos, this group of videos, to solve that need, to clarify the concepts, to be more close to the people, and allow the companies to ask for the real products for companies. Because I need to say this. Sometimes companies provide the wrong product or provide the wrong result. Maybe you see this in the market as well, Ravi. Sometimes companies say, okay, this is a penetration testing, and they provide a report. And when you review the report, you see that this was created with Nessus only or with an automated tool, and that's it, but there is no evidence. So this is not a penetration testing. This is a vulnerability assessment. But they ask for the price of a penetration testing. And this is not fair with the clients because they are taking advantage of a lack of knowledge, you know? maybe you agree with me. I don't know if you see this same behavior in the market.
Oh, yeah. You definitely do that. Now, let's segue more back to your company here. What are your general plans for expansion? Are you going to offer new products, new services, or just try to expand your customer base, or try to expand your international reach, or kind of like all three of them? Or how do you plan? What are your plans for the future, again, on a non-confidential basis?
Well, it's a very interesting question. Right now, we just have 1 year in the United States market directly. We work before through partners, but we created the company and start operations 1 year ago. And we want to establish a solid operation here. We think the market have a nice space for us to work. We just sell services. We don't sell products. So we are totally agnostic about brands. So when a company approaches to us and say, okay, we want to know how we are about cybersecurity and what we need to do, it's nice because we can tell them, okay, you need a technology that do this, that do this, that do this, but we don't say you need to buy this brand in a specific, because we don't have any kind of marriage with any kind of vendor. We are totally agnostic. So we just provide the knowledge that you need to increase your cybersecurity. After we put a better basement here in the operation in the United States, the most probable thing is that we are going to increase our operation in Asia, because right now we are just training in Asia and we want to provide services as well. So I think that will be the next step.
Okay, excellent. Now, can you tell us more about your partnership with CORO and what the acronym stands for exactly?
Oh, of course. CORO is an amazing company. Chicago located, it's by coincidence. They are an amazing company that identify an important and crazy need for small and big companies in some cases. You know that the cybersecurity experts are a very, very weird breed of people. There is a lack, and a crazy lack, about cybersecurity experts in the world. So it's not so easy, and they are expensive. It's not so easy for a company to have a cybersecurity person inside the payroll. So CORO identifies this necessity and they create a tool that allows to almost any person to manage the cybersecurity in a company. So this tool can detect if you are receiving fake emails and gives you statistics and provides you solutions. This tool can detect if you are receiving malware through a specific vector. This tool can identify if you are providing a proper authentication and IAM. That kind of things, management about cybersecurity, that kind of duties. And this tool provides this solution. So what for us, that we are focused in companies that really need cybersecurity, companies that maybe have a part-time IT guy or only one person in the IT department that can't cover the cybersecurity needs of the company, We understand that was a very clear and logical step for us to create a product that involves the core solutions and our services. That makes a strong bond for us and a very nice product that the market is accepting in a very, very nice way. That's what we do with CORO.
Excellent. Okay, now as we transition into the last segment of our show, there's a couple of kind of like some issues or topics I'd like to get your opinion on, if you don't mind. The first one I kind of want to talk about is artificial intelligence. Maybe about, I think, a year and a half, 2 years ago, I wrote a pretty lengthy book on artificial intelligence. It covered computer vision, neural networks, and other things like that. In cybersecurity, AI is such a badly used term. It's overused, in my opinion. You know, a lot of vendors, they say, oh, our product has AI, it makes the customer feel better. And now we're seeing this new tool called the ChatGPT come out. And there's a lot of good, bad? What are your thoughts on AI in general? I mean, I know it's a broad question, but, I mean, do you work with it? What are your quick thoughts?
I love that question. I personally did make that question to one of my best friends past week, and we were debating about it. I love artificial intelligence. We were working with machine learning from some years ago, and okay. I provide a couple speech about machine learning and the different ways that machine learning can be used in cybersecurity for real. You know, most of the companies working in cybersecurity products, they say, we are using machine learning. We are using artificial intelligence. But that's not so real in the most of the cases, or they only have one small part of their products working with artificial intelligence. Related with ChatGPT, I love it. I create a couple of videos in my channel talking about, one of them is hacking with ChatGPT. And I explain how ChatGPT can solve questions like, okay, I need a script created in Python that allow me to detect subdomains for a specific domain. So I need to execute recon in a specific domain. So ChatGPT creates the Python script immediately in a perfect way, using libraries, using functions, etc. You just need to copy the result and paste, create the file.py and execute it. So it's amazing. And ChatGPT can do the same with PowerShell, can do the same with C, C++, etc., even JavaScript. And it's amazing. It's an amazing tool. I love it. And I think it's a step that the entire humanity needs to take. Artificial intelligence arrives to stay. And the future, I just can't dream about how many things we can do with ChatGPT, with all the artificial intelligence we have at our reach, all the power automation that Microsoft are doing right now, all the, you know, Microsoft already have the Bing, but with artificial intelligence. It's not for everybody, not yet. But it's amazing what we can do with artificial intelligence in a search engine, because can be connected with more accurate results, right? You know that one of the problems is that search engines are very oriented with strings, or to strings, specific strings, but not with sentiments, not with a lot of different parameters, with decision trees, etc. And with the artificial intelligence, the results in something so simple like a search engine are going to be so rich and are going to be so better. In cybersecurity, we can use artificial intelligence to execute attacks in a very way to validate vulnerabilities. Because, you know, when you are validating security in a website, I love penetration testing in websites because it's like your creativity against the code that was used to create that website. Because, okay, the attack exists, you know, what is an IDOR, what is cross-site scripting, you know, what is SQL injection, but to exploit and to detect that in a website is more related to creativity, more than tools. Tools are important, of course. You can use Borsig, you can use subproxy, perfect. But the tool is totally useless without the proper knowledge and with the ingenuity and creativity from the penetration tester. I think, at least for one part, artificial intelligence are going to help us to create or to detect in a better way and in a faster way vulnerabilities in code, vulnerabilities in dynamic testing. So I just can't dream about what we can do with artificial intelligence when we have a broad access to this kind of tool.
Okay, excellent. Now, the next topic I kind of want to talk about was about the Internet of Things. You know, this is where everything's all together, you know, smart homes, smart cars. I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy, and to be honest, I hate technology. I only have maybe one or two left in my... Yeah, I mean, I love cyber, but I hate technology. It just, I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy. In fact, I have an old 20-year-old Honda Civic, all analog instrumentation. And unbelievably, it works all the time, even in this horrible Chicago weather we have during wintertime. What are your thoughts on the IoT idea? I mean, do you have a smart home or a smart car? I keep everything very simple as much as possible.
You are an analog guy, in that part at least. Okay, that's very interesting. Well, it's a paradox for me because I understand totally understand and agree with you in a part. If you ask me, you use this kind of voice assistants? No, never. I use them to demonstrations. I'm not going to mention brands if you don't want, but you know that there is a lot of voice assistants and I never use them because I consider it a big risk. And it's so crazy that IoT is so orphan about cybersecurity. Only in 2020, we have the ETSI. Maybe you read about this. I'm pretty sure that you are familiar with the ETSI, the 303-645, talking about cybersecurity for IoT. Only 2020. Uh-huh. 2 years ago, almost. Let's say 3 years. Okay. Let's because that was in June, I think. June 2020. So just 2 years ago, we create a requirement or a list of requirements for IoT. So what happened to all the IoT devices before this list of requirements or before these parameters? They don't have security at all. They are used in critical infrastructure. I'm not talking about OT or SCADA systems, no. You know that we have industrial IoT, and all of these industrial IoT do not have security at all. So this is a big concern for me. And let's go to the home. Okay, you have CCTVs, you have your smart TV, you have your smart fridge, et cetera, et cetera. And if they were created or built before June 2020, they don't have the cybersecurity parameters. So for me, it's a big concern and a big target and attack surface and attack vector for malicious actors. So I like IoT, yes, but with controls. And there is so many brands, so many vendors here that it's crazy. It's almost impossible to protect all of these. In some moment, we are going to have a specific type of firewalls for IoT, like we have for SCADA or OT technologies. So it's almost impossible to stop it, of course. And one big concern is this. Okay, in one moment, in some countries, I'm not going to mention countries, but in some countries, they are going to have this problem. Okay, you have an IoT device with cybersecurity that can cost $50, or you want the same functionality in an IoT device without cybersecurity and it's going to cost $10. Because they don't want to invest in research, development in cybersecurity, experts, etc. And of course, the cost is lower and I am afraid that people is going to select the unsecured device just because it's more affordable.
Right.
That's my opinion. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely have my views on that too. I stay away from all that stuff. It's just it's something else that can go wrong, you know. And another topic I wanted to bring up here is, let me see here, cybersecurity insurance. Being a services provider, I'm sure, I'm assuming that your clients have asked you about this. And right now, getting cybersecurity insurance has gotten a lot harder than it was before. In fact, a lot of insurance companies now, they don't even give a payout unless you've actually, you know, filled out a questionnaire, you know, testing that you have all the controls in place. How have you helped your clients with security insurance? Have they asked you anything about that or?
Yeah, some of my clients, the big ones, the financial clients, we have clients like banks, international banks that works in Europe, Latin America, North America. I'm not going to mention names, but they are huge and they have this kind of insurance. and this insurance cover things like ransomware attacks, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the exercises we do with companies, it's a tabletop exercise with the executive level, the C-levels, talking about, okay, this kind of insurance or this kind of policies are going to be used in the moment that we have an incident with a ransomware, and in which case are we going to ask for the policy or ask for the insurance to pay a ransom or not. The small companies sometimes don't even know that these kind of insurance exist, and in some of the cases, they are not affordable for companies because, you know, the risk is real. And for a company, let's say a company, a small company, a restaurant or a small group of restaurants that have a portal to receive the reservations for the clients, and they receive the payments of the clients, et cetera, et cetera. And they are 5-7 restaurants, and they receive an attack, and the portal is down or at least not usable for the client. How much money they are going to lose just because they don't have the a possibility to receive the client's reservations. So for these kind of companies, this kind of insurance is expensive. So they normally don't do this. They don't even have any kind of diagnostics about their portals. So, of course, they are not going to have cybersecurity insurance. And in some cases, from my perspective, the cybersecurity insurance just become a way to pay the ransomware for a company. Because in some of the cases, they don't force the companies to execute the diagnostics that they should. And they just play with the risk. And they just try to think, okay, this is a small company or a medium company. Let's do just a vulnerability assessment, and that's it. And we can provide a small cover. So I think we can improve in this field. It's my opinion.
Okay, yeah, same here. I mean, I still think getting cybersecurity insurance is still too complicated, more than what it should be. I mean, it's nothing at all like buying, you know, car insurance, you know, which you can do online or anything like that. But the next topic is, you know, 3 years ago or 4 years ago, you know, the world was turned upside down probably three times over with the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, and we saw, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of bad things. But there were some good things that kind of came out of it, too. You know, the vaccines that came to market a lot quicker than the normal 2 or 3 years. And then I guess the other good thing, the remote workforce. You know, people thought that this would happen in 4 or 5 years. But, you know, we saw it happen, like, within 2 months. So what do you think about the remote workforce? Do all of you in your company work remotely? And do you think this remote workforce model will be permanent? Because I know there's talk about this hybrid model, but honestly, the people that have done that, it hasn't worked very well. Everybody wants to work remotely now. So what are your thoughts on that?
I love remote work. We did that before pandemics in some cases. And at the end of the day, right now we have a hybrid scheme, but the most of our people prefers remote work. Some people say, if you force me to go to the office day by day, or at least 2 or 3 days in the week, maybe I'm going to look for another job. So, and we hate to force the people to go to the office. And as I mentioned, before pandemics, because, you know, in countries like Colombia, people lost like 2 or 2.5 hours of their life in traffic. So those 2 hours are lost time with their families, with their kids, or in activities like learning or enjoying their lives, you know? So right now, we prefer remote work. We have a hybrid scheme, as I mentioned, but we prefer remote work. And we have people working in different countries in the world. We have people in Colombia. We have people in Central America. We have people in the United States, in Chile. So remote work for us was so common, so normal. To be totally honest with you, Ravi, in the moment that the quarantine starts for us was like, okay, guys, see you in the moment that we can come back to the office. And that's it. And we didn't need to make any change in our technologies because we already have everything related to cloud or remote access, et cetera, et cetera. So for us, it was so transparent to migrate to the to an entire or an 80-70% remote scheme that for us was normal, totally normal.
Now, the other topic I want to bring up, I think we may have even talked about this before when I brought the CMMC, are the data privacy laws. You know, now, this kind of goes to different extremes. We have the California, you know, their CCPA legislation. Then we have the GDPR in the European Union and EU. And now we've got states coming out their own version of data privacy. Now other countries coming out their own version of their own laws. I am, with all of this, and I've written a lot about this, actually, about these data privacy laws, I kind of have now the position where we need to have, at least here in the United States, now obviously we can't control what happens to the rest of the world, but here in the U.S., we need to have a central source, like a federal authority, you know, to have everything in one place, right? Because if we, like, for example, company, if you do business in one state and then you have customers in another state, you know, you have to be bound by so many data privacy laws, right? It gets confusing. So what I'm trying to get at is, you know, right after 9/11, you know, George Bush or whoever was at the time, they created the Department of Homeland Security, right, to kind of centralize, you know, the war on the terrorism. So I'm now positioning, and I'll be writing an extensive white paper on this year, probably by next year, is that we need a Department of Cybersecurity. And that's what I'm proposing. And, like, what are your thoughts on all that? Do we need a central source for these privacy laws and cybersecurity laws, or should the states kind of run amok with what they want to create?
Well, I think so. I agree. But we need to have in mind important efforts executed by different entities. Maybe you're familiar with CISA, right? The Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. They do a lot of different things and important efforts to increase the cybersecurity. Maybe it's a duty that they can take care, right? The part of the privacy laws of the United States. I agree that we need a centralized agency managing this part and creating the laws and the acts related with the privacy. But I think we have the options. The options exist. Maybe the functions are not totally assigned or defined, but I think we can work with the institutions we have.
Okay, excellent. Well, you know what, David, I might even like to have you as a co-author for this white paper. We can talk more about it down the road here. It's something I'll probably start thinking early or late this year, too, because I think with the topics you've written in your book, I think this could be a good match, I think, for both of us to write something together on this. But the last thing I kind of wanted to bring up here was, before the podcast, we were talking about inflation, you know, layoffs in the tech sector, but cybersecurity, that is one thing where there's still a huge worker shortage, you know, and there have been a lot of complaints that companies are too picky, they have to have all these certifications, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm of the type, if a person shows interest in cybersecurity, they have a passion, and they have good research skills, hire them, right? They don't have to have all these certifications or anything like that. Has your company, SecPro, have you done anything to kind of help, like mentoring high school students or college students with kind of getting into cybersecurity and hopefully, and maybe in some way, trying to shorten this cyber workforce gap?
I love that question. Yeah, we do a lot, and we feel that we can do more if the people react in the proper way. I mean, I mentor a lot of people in different countries. Normally, I am the kind of guy that if you write me an email and ask me, "Hey, I want to start in cybersecurity. How can I start, etc.?" I am the person that gives you the time and send you materials and share my time with you. I am very, very happy to do it. So every person that wants mentorship from me, it's more than welcome to contact me. And I'll be very happy to help. In one moment, let me tell you a story. 6 months ago, NSA cyber director put a post in Twitter saying that only 7%, it was up so few number, 7% of the cybersecurity workforce, it's African American. And I say, okay, he's right. He's totally right. And I post and retweet saying, okay, I agree, it's true, I can help. If somebody wants to contact me and receive mentorship from me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, please feel free to contact me, blah, blah, blah. And I create immediately, because there are some things that you need to act immediately. And I feel in that moment that I need to act. So I create a session in Zoom, and I say, okay, guys, girls, everybody is invited. If you want to come and let's talk about protocols, I create a career path. I say, okay, the first thing you need to know in cybersecurity is networking. So you need to understand protocols. You need to understand TCP/IP. You need to understand the different layers of the OC model, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I create a session, blah, blah, blah. I publish this in Twitter, blah, 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 blah. A lot of people resonate in that moment and say, okay, how nice, blah, 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 blah. Perfect. I create the session. I start the session. How many people do you think were connected to this session with me in that moment? The first one.
Oh, maybe 100 people.
Okay. You are so positive. You are so positive. One. One girl.
What? No.
One girl. One. Yeah.
Oh.
One girl connects with me. I enjoy a lot. We were working 1 hour and a half. That was in Twitter, in YouTube. I published the video in YouTube. And only one girl connects with me to the session. And I say, okay, maybe it wasn't a bad time, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to create a second one. And in that one, again, one person. So, in that moment, I can't understand. I can't understand that. People are saying, nobody wants to help. Nobody wants to give me mentorship. No, nobody wants to tell me which is the proper career path. Nobody wants to help. And I say, okay, I'm here. I have 25 years experience. I train cyber forces in more than 10 countries. I train Secret Service. I train FBI. Homeland Security guys. Yeah, of course. It has been an honor for me to train U.S. Army, U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy. I train them, and I train cyber defense forces in many countries. And I'm here for you.
But
just use me, ask me, and one person connects to my session. So I say, sometimes people just want to say nobody wants to help. And in the moment that somebody says, I'm here, use me, the reaction is nothing. Nothing.
Wow. Wow, I'd love
I'd
love to have more podcasts about your training for the FBI and Secret Service. That's so interesting. Wow, that really blows me away. Wow, congratulations on that achievement. Wow, that's so impressive. Wow,
thank you so
much.
You know what? It's one of the most important things in my life. Yeah,
but you know what? In the end, David, what really counts is it doesn't. If you've helped even just one person, that's what really counts. Obviously,
of course, people.
But, it's up to the individual. And if they don't like it, then, it's up to them. But if you can just help one person, I think that would be great. In fact, that's my goal with all my writing.
Totally agree. I have some mentees right now that I provide materials. I provide access to my trainings. And in Latin America, to be honest, the reception of the people, it's great. Just a comparison. In my YouTube channel, I have 44,000 subscribers in Spanish.
Oh, wow.
44,000 subscribers. Normally, normally more or less 100,000 people by month access my content. But in English, my YouTube channel has 85 subscribers. Maybe my English is so bad. I don't know.
No, it's tough. trying to get anything on YouTube or anything like that, it's not easy. It's a tough proposition. But we can talk more about that later. I think I might be able to help you with that too, actually. But as we start to wrap up the show here, we got like maybe 28, 25 minutes left. You know, the world is changing quite a bit, right, David? I mean, you know, we've seen I'm not trying to be political. I try to remain as apolitical as possible. But, you know, as I said, we've got the, you know, the inflation. The feds don't know what they're going to be doing now. Banks, you know, are starting to get scared. And we have a situation in the Ukraine now with Russia. You know, how do you see what do you think cyber threat landscape is going to be like here in this year? I mean, we're already almost to the first quarter, but we still have a long way to go. I definitely have my views on this too, but I want to know what you think first.
Yes. I think this is going to be worst. And companies and people in the same level needs to be concerned. Let's use the word concern. But I'm going to rephrase this. People and companies need to provide the real importance to cybersecurity subjects. Because in a very crazy world, in a very, very turbulent world that we have right now, as you mentioned before, one thing, it's a fact. Day by day, there are more cyber criminals. Day by day, there are more malicious actors that wants to receive money committing crimes, because cybercrime, it's more profitable than drugs in some cases, and safer.
Right.
Because, you know, and if you say cybercrime, it's an economy, it's the third economy in the world after the United States and China, you know? So it's that's the importance about cybersecurity. It's the third economy, cybercrime, in the world. So people need to provide the proper importance to cybersecurity, because nobody's safe. That's the problem. Nobody's safe. Doesn't matter if you are just a solopreneur or just a person in your home or a retired person, or you are the CEO of a huge company. You have risks in cybersecurity, and you need to confront them, and you need to solve them in the best way you can. So I think that in the near future, the person that is not informed and empowered about cybersecurity is going to suffer a lot of problems, because it's going to be a victim. And the worst thing here, or the best thing, because can be both, is cybersecurity. It's a knowledge that it's at your reach. Everybody can learn. YouTube, it's an amazing source of information. Udemy, there is a lot of providers of cybersecurity training. Our company, we provide cybersecurity training all the time. So everybody can have learning cybersecurity or learn about cybersecurity, and you need to do this, because to be a victim or not is your decision, and only your decision. Not the criminal decision, it's yours.
Well, talking about this, actually, there's, you know, I my company also has a subsidiary in which I offer, you know, cyber services. I'm a reseller for some other different vendors, you know, like privileged access management, pen testing, vulnerability scanning. And, you know, you know, we've tried to hit the SMB market here in the Western Burbs in Chicago, and these SMB owners, deep down, they know that there is a threat and that they are at risk. But their attitude on the outside is, well, I haven't been hit, so I probably won't ever be hit ever again. Well, that's the one time then you're going to be tech. And that's the one thing that I just don't understand about people's mentality. You know, I mean, I know people are creatures of habit. They don't want to change, like using the same password, you know, for 10 years, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm not the best at I'm not going to admit that here on the podcast, but, you know, and that's just been, you know, a difficult proposition. And I keep telling them, you know, everybody's at risk. You're never at one, you know, you'll never not be 100% at risk for being a victim. I mean, the only thing you can do is mitigate that risk, right? The chances of being hit are always there. what we can do is mitigate that risk. And I try to tell that to people, and you know, it's just, they don't understand. And I think part of the problem is we live here in the United States. We kind of live in a reactive society, you know. People won't act on something until something bad happens first. And then, unfortunately, that's when everybody, you know, kind of starts to think, ooh, I should have done something ahead of time. But anyway.
Yeah.
So as so
yeah,
the one last
that's
thing.
That's so sad. You're totally right.
Yeah, go ahead. So one more thing. Well, two more things I want to ask you. One thing I always ask my guests here is, you know, what do you tell your friends, family, clients, how to do to protect or how to mitigate that risk from becoming a victim? I mean, give a laundry list. I've had people tell me, oh, you should use a password manager, make sure you use strong passwords, use multi-factor authentication, you know, so forth. What's your wish list?
That's an amazing question. Well, in my book, I talk about the main subjects related to the cybersecurity, and let me talk a little bit about that wish list that normally I present to all my relatives. But normally we provide webinars in a monthly basis, Ravi, and they are free for everyone. So normally we demonstrate how malicious actors can take control about your email, how they treat you to grab control about your social networks, that kind of things. But about the wish list, okay, please, the first thing, use a safe browser. I mean, a browser oriented to privacy, a browser that can stop a JavaScript execution. Browsers like Brave, browsers like Epic, or use tools like NoScript if you prefer Firefox, that kind of things. First thing. Second, your passwords, as you mentioned. Change your password. Never use a password that can be found in a social network. That means don't use the name of your husband, your wife, your kids, your birth date, etc. And use a password management system or password manager. And always have an anti-malware, always, because it's crazy. But one time I hear to a cybersecurity expert say that you don't need an anti-malware. Man, one thing is that you say that there is no perfect anti-malware. Okay, I totally agree with you. But from that to say you don't need an anti-malware, that's crazy. So please have an anti-malware, any anti-malware, even a free one, but have an anti-malware. At least you are increasing raising the bar for the malicious actors. In emails, never click in a link or download an attachment if you are not totally sure about who is sending this email, and validate the address, the source address that is sending this email to you. Never connect to a public Wi-Fi. Never. Please never do that, because your traffic, your communications can be compromised. And be aware about the tricks, about the social engineering, about all the kind of tricks, right? The phone calls, the SMS, that kind of things. And the last one, provide your family with this knowledge. Try to be or make echo or be an evangelist about cybersecurity to your family, to your kids, to your elders, because they are potential victims right now. That's my wish list. Of course, I am missing a lot of things, but the main things are those subjects.
Excellent. It's an excellent wish list. Now, finally, as we wrap up our show, David, what's the best way for someone to get in contact with you in case they have more questions about cyber or they want your services? What's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Okay, you can reach me in Twitter, David Pereira CID. It's one of the ways you can find me. SecPro have all the social networks. You can look for SecPro in Twitter. You can look for SecPro in YouTube. You can look for me in LinkedIn, David Pereira Cyber, and you are going to find me in LinkedIn, and you can connect. I receive everybody. I accept the connection for everybody, at least if it is not a fake profile. Normally, I review your profiles before to accept them. And right. If it's not a fake profile, I'm going to accept you. And you can reach me in that way, so YouTube channel, LinkedIn, and Twitter.
Okay. Well, David, we thank you very much for your time today. And we hope
Ravi,
to have you get
amazing
podcast.
Place.
Yeah, this is really a great
thank
podcast.
You so much.
And I think I've already got some topics for some future ones in mind right now, too. So we'll be in touch, and have a great evening.
Thank you so much, Ravi. Same for you. I enjoyed so much this time, and I hope it's not the last time.
No, we'll have many more. Believe me. Take care.
You too.